All right. Well, good morning. There's no Sid, there's no Brett, there's no James, so here I be. For those of you that haven't been here in a little bit or whatever, don't worry, I'm not the normal guy. There's someone much better. But with that said, I do got a couple of things I want to share with you this morning. You know, and I think I've shared this before, one of the most liberating things was listening to Sid say, hey, don't worry about getting this expository teaching. Just kind of break off where you are. And so that's what I'm going to do this morning, is kind of break off where I've been living, the things I've been dealing with. I was telling the guys in the side room, like I used to every time I spoke, since you only speak once every, you know, so often, you wanted to come in and like have this great expository teaching that no one's ever heard, like, and teach something that nobody, like, oh man, that was great. I don't do that anymore. The older I get, it's what I shared, is it's all about the fundamentals, right? It's all about the basics. It's really not. It's about the process. And that's kind of what I want to talk about a little bit this morning, is the process. You know, we're right in the middle of wrestling season. I was telling the guys yesterday, I think I left the house or got up somewhere around, it was in the 4 o'clock hour, you know, when I left, and I think I got home around 9, 10 o'clock last night, somewhere around there. I don't know, but it was a long day of wrestling. It was great. Like, I'm not upset about it, but I was definitely tired. Like, I remember turning over to Jamie and be like, hey, we'll hang out tomorrow night, and just, I turn the lights off and turn my box fan on, because I sleep with a box fan, and I don't apologize for it. You can judge me all you want to, but it goes everywhere, because if it don't, I don't sleep. But, and that was it. So I woke up this morning, and just want to share a little bit of stuff that's kind of been happening with us. I will say this, like, church-wise, FCA, we had a kid get saved, I don't know, about a month and a half ago at an FCA meeting. So when you're looking at all the Chick-fil-A that the church purchases, and that happens because you guys are throwing money in the basket in our church. Every time I call Ariel, I'm like, hey, sorry, you know, I either had church back out or I was terrible and forgot to text you until today. Can we get some biscuits tomorrow? And Victory's always there to provide that. And it allows our kids to teach, as opposed to, like, you know, bringing in a youth pastor or somebody like that. But, you know, we had a young lady, like, our service was over, and she was like, she's just weeping and crying, like, I need to talk to somebody. And she got saved at a public high school in 2024, which I think is pretty neat. It's a lot better than, you know, like, I think in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, oh man, it's relatively a common place. It's been a minute for me since I've seen one at the school. So I was pretty amped up about that. And then I guess it was about a month ago, give or take, I was able to baptize one of my wrestlers. I went to his church and got to dunk him. And I will tell you this, and he's not going to listen to this, which is fine. But if he does, it's okay too. We've got a pretty good relationship. If you'd have came to me 2 years ago when I first got a hold of him and all that, and if you'd have laid money on which one of the kids are going to get it figured out, he would not have been at the top of the list for me. And that is part of what I want to talk about today is you know, the process of things. You know, I'm going to be honest with you, and if my bosses hear this, it might not go good, but I'm okay with it. I have become increasingly, like, upset with athletics, and I'm a head high school coach who has spent 24 years coaching, and I'm becoming increasingly upset, not with all of it, okay, but I feel like there are certain sections and places where we have stopped giving our kids the one tool high school athletics was meant for. And this sermon is not about athletics, guys. It's about the process, but it's where I'm at, so you guys have to deal with it. But to me, the whole point that, like, athletics and games and all that stuff came about is so that we could teach young people how to be better old people. Okay, like, that was the reason for it, is to teach young people how to be better old people, right? Like, you go through something tough, you're going to be okay. Life's going to be tough. And so when life gets tough, you can handle it, right? It's not your first time, right? You know, Dan Gable, you know, great wrestler. Once you've wrestled, everything is easy. It's a true statement, right? Like, if you've made it through that process, you're going to come up against hard things in life. And you know what? You're going to be okay. But I feel like, and this is my feeling, so you take it for what it's worth, the further we've gotten further and further away from that, it's become more about the result and not about the process, which allows people to say stuff like, you know what, we're missing this piece, let's go grab it from somebody else, right? Hey, we're missing this piece, let's go, because we need to win, right? It's the, that is the goal. We've got to win a state title. We've got to beat everybody else. So let's go grab somebody else and let's go put them on this team and maybe we can be winners. And we've developed a mercenary mindset, right? And it's in high school athletics. It was, you know, in college athletics. Now it's in high school athletics. Now I'm sure it's in the 6U travel ball team. Right? Oh man, we don't have a good pitcher. Let's go take their pitcher and let's go win the Youth World Dixie Cup United States World Series title. Whoopsh. Great job. And what we've taught our young people to do is bypass the process, right? We're bypassing, and that is the tool. That's the gift that we're supposed to be giving young people, is the whole thing that gets you to a goal, right? That gets you through a hard time, and we're bypassing it. We're making it easy for them. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that today. And why it's so difficult. So as I was reading last night, I'm skipping around. I'm looking through some stuff we've done with our FCA huddle. I ended up in Luke chapter 14. And I'm going to read all of it, and then I'll talk about it a little bit because that's what I do. So in verse 16, this is Jesus talking. It's in red letters, so it's probably important. And he's telling a story. That's how Jesus teaches, is telling stories, which is what I think my best and most favorite teachers did. They told stories. They didn't just stand up and say things. They told stories to help you remember things, right? Like Colonel Powell, if you ever had that guy, which I don't think anybody in here did. I'm getting older. He was a great storyteller, and I remembered most of the history that I know now from sitting in his classroom. Like that, and that was, I was 14 years old, maybe 13. Anyways, 16, a certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those that had been invited, "Come, for everything is now ready." Everything's done. Everything's been taken care of. I've done all the prep, which anybody that enjoys the kitchen work, which I know Sid's and Lori have started enjoying that. I enjoy getting on my old side box smoker. It's not a short time. I don't have one of those pellet smokers, by the way. You guys, y'all cheat. Like, with your Wi-Fi and, oh, I'm going to go coach for 7 hours and I'm still monitoring my meat temperature. You're cheating. You're bypassing the process. I'm just saying. It's not fair. It doesn't taste better either. But anyways, it takes some time. Like if you're cooking and doing things right, take some time. So he said, "Hey, everything's ready." In verse 18, it says, "But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, 'I have just bought a field. I've got to go see about it. Please excuse me.' Another said, 'I've just bought 5 yoke of oxen. And I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me.' Still another said, 'I just got married, so I can't come.' And so the servant came back and reported this to his master. And then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servant to go out and quickly tell all the streets and alleys of the town to bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, 'What you ordered has been done, but there's still room.' So he said, 'Go out to the roads, the country lanes, and compel them to come so that my house will be full. I will tell you, not one of those who were invited will get a taste of my banquet.'" So my sidebar, this is a core belief of mine as well. People are going to do what they want to do. People do what they want to do. If you want to go somewhere, you're going to go, okay? And I've got kids that are 14 that show up late to practice, and I give them the business. Coach, well, they can't drive. No, they can't. But I promise you this, if they beg, borrowed, pleaded, and cried at home to their mom to go to the party or go spend the night with their friend on Friday night, they can do the same thing to get mom out of the house on time to show up to practice on time. So if you want to be there, you will, okay? If you want to come to church on Sunday morning, you will, right? If you want to go out on Friday night, you will, right? If you want to go to somebody's party, you will find a way to get to their party. People do what they want to do, okay? This guy wanted to have a party and have people show up. People didn't show up. Guess what? He went and found some people to show up. People do what they want to do. It's an ingrained DNA. We fight for what we want. We're selfish people. I'm selfish, okay? I promise you, on January 1st, I'm going to watch Georgia play Notre Dame. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. And my truck, my quarterback drives a truck now, dadgummit. He drives, I don't know if y'all have seen that. Y'all have. Yeah, he drives an F-150, old Gunner Stockton from Tiger, Georgia. But I'm going to do it because that's what I want to do. When I want to have practice, I'm going to have practice. And when I want to eat, I'm going to eat. When I want to do what I want to do, I'm going to do what I want to do. People do what they want to do. And that's part of the problem, is we've allowed that to be an acceptable part of our culture. I didn't want to do it. I'm sorry, Sally, Jimmy, I'm sorry you didn't want to do it, but it's necessary. There are some things that are necessary for you to be successful in life, and sometimes we got to do what we don't want to do. That's discipline. That's where the word discipline comes in. Abe Lincoln, putting off what you want now for what you want later. That's a quote from Abe Lincoln. So if you want to do something, you're going to do it. If you want to be disciplined and be committed to a process to make you better, that's what you're going to do. The reason that so many people, it's New Year's coming up, right? And we're going to have New Year's resolutions, okay? And they're going to fail. People will fail. People will fail. That's the whole thing. Like, you know, gym memberships in January skyrocket, and then don't nobody show up in February, right? People, they make these resolutions. You know what a resolution is? Definition of revolution. Resolution is to decide that you're going to do something or decide that you're not going to do something. That's awesome. I'm going to be president of the United States. I've decided that. The problem is I don't have a plan for it. I don't have a goal. So people make these goals and they don't put a plan in place. We'll sit down with our teams, right? And I'm going to use athletics. What's your goal for the season this year? I'm going to be state champ, coach. Cool. What's your plan to get there? That's the problem with New Year's resolutions. I'm going to stop drinking. Cool. How? I don't know. I'm just going to do it. I don't think that's how it works. Okay, I've seen a lot of people not be able to make that happen because they don't put a plan in place. And if you don't put a plan in place and you don't stick to it, you're going to be in trouble. Let's see. I got to look at my nose. It's been a minute. It's not as smooth as making transitions on the drum sometimes. All right. Luke 14, 26 and 27 is what I'm supposed to read next, I think. And I'm using my phone this morning, so that's where we're at. All right, yeah. The title in your Bible, you know how they have like those subtitles? I love those things. They really help me out. It says, the cost of being a disciple. And then Jesus is reading in 26. It says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate their father and their mother and their wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be the disciple. And if you dig in and read some of the older texts and words, it doesn't necessarily say, like even the Passion Translation is a little different. It doesn't say you have to hate your father and your mother and your wife. What it does say is those things all have to come second. They have to be second, right? They cannot be the priority, right? That's the definition of humility, is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. Right? It's not about me, right? I have a life lesson I teach my students. Sometimes it's not about me. Sometimes it's about us, right? That whole Benedict Arnold, you guys remember, y'all are older, so y'all know him. They've never heard of him, right? He was the biggest traitor in U.S. history, right, in the American Revolution. And I always ask him, what if George Washington or some of his leadership would have went to him like, hey, man, you're doing a great job. Right, you're doing a phenomenal job, right? Blah, 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 blah. We appreciate you. And spent some time building him up. Would he have still felt less valued? Would he have still felt less valued? Would he have still done what he did? Right? Now, ultimately, the problem is it was more about him than it was about us for him. That was the problem, right? But if somebody goes to him, spends some time with him, would he have felt less valued? Because what we've done through this athletic process and through these things, we've placed value on the wrong thing. We've placed some value on the end result. The end result is a product of the process, right? You know, a kid, we won us a trophy yesterday. Coach, what are you going to do with the trophy? Where are you going to put it? I don't know. Trophy's not, it's not relevant. It's a representation. I said it's wood, hay, and stubble. It's a representation of the work you guys put in today. That's all it is. I'm not worried about what it looks like. You know, actually, it was pretty neat. It looked like an NCAA trophy, and I was like, it was pretty neat. But it's a byproduct. Okay, winning is a byproduct of what you do. It's not about your talent. But anyways, you know, I always ask myself, you know, ask my kids, what is the definition of humility? It's not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. Great wrestlers don't have lives. Tony Armas told me this one time. How come every kid's not the best that you've ever seen that are talented? It's because they're not willing to do what verse 26 and 27 says. They're not. It's not willing to put all of those things secondary. And I'm not telling you guys to be, if you're going to be an athlete, to put your family behind you. That should be ahead of your athletic life and all those things. Okay, but it does mean that you have to take all that extra stuff and be willing to live without it. Right? You got to be willing not to go to proms and go to a Super 32 competition. You got to be willing not to go to the Sadie Hawkins dance and go get an extra run in. Okay, that's why people aren't great. We're a lot of talented kids come through Carrollton High School. A lot of talented kids. They got a lot of talent. And there's that old adage, right? Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. Well, first of all, that's not always true. Okay? Like, I'm not real fast anymore. If I went out and did sprints for the next 20 years, I'm still going to be slower than most of the kids that are playing football on Friday nights at Carrollton High School. I can work hard all I want to, and they're still going to be naturally faster than me. But I wish what we would add on to that is hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. But if talent works hard, what happens when talent works hard? What happens when we take the gifts that we've been given and we do the things that we're supposed to do when we're supposed to do them? I feel like so many times in our spiritual life, see, you don't have to be gifted physically to be a great one spiritually. You know, at the end of the day, you got to be gifted physically to make it to the NFL. You got to be gifted physically to do some things. You don't have to be gifted spiritually to do great things. Hey, that's not something that easily besets us, right? We've got all those assets to us. We just have to be willing to go through the process. You've seen that meme where it's like people who want to win, people who are willing to do what it takes to win, right? And there's lines there, and everybody wants to win. And there's like one dude in line willing to do what it takes to win. It takes doing extra stuff. You didn't get good at soccer because you just showed up to your high school practices for 4 years. I'm going to assume that. I mean, I kind of know that that's not how it went down, but you probably did a little bit of extra, right? People don't do great things by not going through stuff. So you have to reach a point that you know that you need the process. And I'm going to go back and I want to talk about that kid that I got to baptize just a little bit. Extremely talented wrestler when he showed up. Better than anybody in the room. Literally the best wrestler on our team, but was not committed to the process at all. At all. And when he met other talented individuals, things didn't go well. He didn't win those matches. You can go 48-8, but those eight that you lost were the ones that we needed to win, right? To win state titles and to make a name for ourselves. At some point in time, we will reach a point to where the process is important, right? And I've got some scripture that's going to get to us right here, but we'll reach a point to where we understand shortcuts. You can't make them and be successful. You know, the difference between the guys that play on Sundays and the guy on Saturdays is not the physical giftings. It's not the physical giftings. It is the things they're willing to do outside of life, right? Am I willing to sit for 40 hours a week and watch film? Am I willing to get, you know, 3 or 4 workouts in a day when people aren't watching me and this, that, and the other? Am I willing to do those things? It's not the talent level. And so at some point in time, if you did not go through those things that it takes to be successful, you're not going to be successful. So I guess I am going to go to 1 Kings really quickly. I'm going to paraphrase what happens in 18 and 19. I think Sid taught about this recently. James may have taught about it. Jay Webb for our FCA stuff has talked about it. A youth minister from Southern Hills came into our FCA, and he's talked about it. So it's kind of been on my heart. I'm going to paraphrase 18, and I might read 19. This is when Elijah ends up running from Jezebel, right? So in 18, he challenges all the prophets of Baal. I can't like click around and talk at the same time. But he challenges all the prophets of Baal, and he's like, hey, man, let's ride. Let's find out whose God's real. And he does a lot of things, and he goes overboard, right? They're basically, you know, he says, hey, y'all get a bull, cut it up. I'm going to get a bull, cut it up. We'll see whose God comes and eats it up with some fire, pours a lot of water on his just to show, hey, by the way, this ain't fake, right? This is not a magic trick. And then God shows up and shows out, and he does these awesome things, right? And then in 19, is when Jezebel shows up, okay? And I'm just going to read really quickly through it, and then we'll kind of come to an end. I don't talk a whole lot anymore. Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with a sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, may the gods deal with me, but be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them. Basically, I'm going to kill you. And so in 3, Elijah was afraid and he ran for his life. And when he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there while he himself, so he was alone, went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. I have had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life. I'm no better than my ancestors. How many of us have been there in life to where, like, that's it. Done. Whether it's with a job, I don't mean maybe necessarily you're ready to die, but like, I don't want to work no more. I don't want to deal with my family no more. I don't want to just, I'm done, right? I've been there. I don't know if you have, but I've been there. I've been there a lot. You know, last year was tough for me personally. Like, I went through a lot of stuff on my journey in my wilderness. And he said, take my life. I'm no better than my ancestors. And then he laid down under a bush and he fell asleep. All at once, an angel touched him and said, get up and eat. He looked around, and there by his head was some baked bread over some hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank, and then he laid down again. And in 7, the angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you. So he got up and he ate and he drank. Strengthened by the food, he traveled for 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. And there he went to a cave and he spent the night. And then the word of the Lord came to him. What are you doing here, Elijah? He replied, I've been very zealous for the Lord, my God. I've done everything right. Guys, I've done everything right. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword, and I'm the only one left, and now they want to kill me too. 11, the Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord's about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake. The Lord was not in the earthquake, and after the earthquake became a fire, and the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he put his cloak over his face, and he went out, and he stood at the mouth of the cave. And a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? He replied, I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, put your prophets to death with the sword, and I'm the only one left. Now they're trying to kill me too. And then the Lord said to him, go back the way you came and go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael, king over Aram. Also anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, king over Israel. Anoint Elisha, the son of Shaphat from Abdel Meholah. I'm going with that one. Meholah. To succeed you as prophet. Jehu will put to death any who escape the sword of Hazael, and Elisha will put to death any who escape the sword of Jehu. Yet I reserve 7,000 in Israel, all the knees who have not bowed to Baal and those mouths that have not kissed him. Okay, so now I'm going to go back and talk about a couple of those things. So Elijah does what he does, and he goes out and he's done, right? A lot of us have been done, whether it's anxiety that kind of cripples us, whether it's some depression. Those things are real that may cripple us, keeps us down. We tell ourselves these things. Guys, that's why people end up making bad decisions to not, maybe sometimes not be here anymore, whether it's actually physically or emotionally, physically. They may leave you in life is because they start to believe those things. They know they're not true, but they're down so low at a point to where they can't see the truth, and they believe the things. I'm not good enough. I'm not going to make it. I'm not smart. They know better mentally, but emotionally they don't, and their emotions have taken over, and they're down so low. They're in a desert, and they just want to die. God, take me. I've had enough. I've done a good job. Take me. I've had enough. And so what does God do to get these people out of the funk? He gives them something really small to do. In verse 5, he says, get up and eat, man. Get up and eat, right? It's not a big deal, but you need to get some good quality health inside your system. Have some water, have some carbs, you'll feel better. We all feel better when we eat carbs, right? He says bread's carbs. Have some water, have some carbs, you'll feel better. So he does it. And there was no "and suddenly" and a mighty rushing wind, and all of a sudden he felt better. Then he woke him up again the next day. Said, hey, man, go get some water. Get some carbs in your system. You got to do the little bitty things, right, to get out of the big nasty things. It's not like somebody's going to stroke you some big check to get you out of it. You got to get up and go to work sometimes. You got to do what you're supposed to do. You got to have the discipline to get up when the alarm clock goes off, drink some water, eat some bread, and go do it again. And so it's the little things that will get you through. And if you don't do those little things to get to the end, when you do hit that junk and you're in the funk, you're not going to get up and get some water, not going to get up and get some bread. I promise you, your friend, that was a big thing for him, laying up there in that hospital bed, not being able to walk. Hey, man, you need to wake up. You need to get some water in your system. We need you to eat today. I promise you, he didn't feel like eating every single day that he woke up. He probably, there's some times, whether he admits it or not, he was pretty low, right? and he'll talk about it at some point, but it's the little things that we've got to do. And then in verse 15, after he goes and he gets in these mountains and he gets in the cave and God reveals himself to him and he's awake and he sees all these things and he's kind of coming out of the funk, God doesn't say, all right, I want you to go somewhere else different so that you don't have to deal with this anymore. Verse 15, I'm going to read it to you again. It says, the Lord said to him, go back the way you came. Go back to the last point that you had success, but also go back to where you were overcome by fear. That's what Elijah said. He said he was afraid, so he left. He was anxious, so he left. God didn't say go somewhere new. He said, I brought you to this desert. You spent 40 days out here dealing with this stuff, getting up, eating, drinking, doing the small things. Now go back to that point, and that's where you're going to succeed. That's where you're going to overcome. That's where you're going to stop being afraid. That's where you're going to stop being anxious. That's where you're going to stop being depressed. Not by running away from it. I've given you a break, right? You've been out here in the wilderness. That's your break, right? Eating bread and water. And I've revealed myself to you. Now I'm telling you that you are good enough. You're mine. Go back to the point where you've had success. Go back to the point where you were afraid and be there, because I'm going to be there with you. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go surround yourself with some people. These are some people that I've put in your life. We're doing a leadership study with my team right now. Who are people in your life that you need to cut out? Who are people in your life that you need to put in? That's what God said to him right now. I want you to go put these people in your life and put these people beside you, right? I want you to go talk to these people and anoint these people. Go back to where you had problems. Surround yourself with the right people, and success is going to find you. You're going to be okay. You're going to be who I've called you to be if you'll go back to that place. And then in 19, he says, once you're done with all this stuff, in 19, go, I'm sorry, it's not in 19, it's in like 18. It says, go anoint Elisha. Now, what is Elisha to Elijah? Anybody can answer. This is the free part of the service. Eh? I'm old, can't hear. What is Elisha to Elijah? This is his apprentice. So he said, go back, surround yourself with people, and then go pour into somebody else. You don't get to keep this to yourself. All these things that I've given you, you know how I judge these great athletes and great people? If they don't come back and pour in to where they started, they ain't got it. They didn't get it figured out. Because at some point in time, it's all wood, hay, and stubble. All your accomplishments, the things that you say, the things that you do, all that stuff is going when you go. You know how it stays? You pour into some people. You got to come back and pour into some little girl that can't. You do that during the summer, right? That's playing soccer. You got to come back to where you've been, and you got to find somebody to pour into. All the good things that you have, that's what we're supposed to be doing, is we're taking all these good lessons that we've learned in life, and we're giving them to these kids and saying, go out. I'm trying not to give them any of my bad stuff. Give them all my good stuff and go out in life and go conquer life. So you've got to surround yourself with some people, and you got to pour into the right people to be successful. You don't have to be gifted physically to be great in the kingdom. You just have to be willing to go through some wilderness, go through some tough times, stay the course, right? What's the bread of life? He said, wake up, get some water, and eat some bread. Well, what's the bread of life? Y'all know the answer. It's the word of God, right? It's the word. It's Jesus. He's the bread of life. So if you're down, you're in a funk, you're not feeling good, wake up, get you some bread. It ain't got to jump off the page to you and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, thank you, Jesus, I'm back. I'm in the zone again. That's not how it works. There's no "and suddenly," right? That don't happen most of the time. There's been something brewing that you didn't know about. Me and a coach were talking about that whole David and Goliath story yesterday. And all these people still preach it like it was some big upset. It was not an upset to anybody that was involved in the fight. David was not shocked. He had been through a process. He had killed a lion. He had killed a bear. He'd been out there sleeping in the mud and the muck. He's used to hand-to-hand combat. Just because you were shocked by it doesn't mean God sprinkled fairy dust on David, and all of a sudden he smoked Goliath. That's not how it worked. Don't say that. He was anointed by God, but he had been through a process. God had put him in a place that seemed nasty and dirty. You ever been a shepherd? I haven't. Not on my to-do list. Okay, sleeping outside with folks, right? Dealing with lions and bears. It's not a fun place to be. But thank God that he had been there, because if he hadn't, when the time came for him to attack Goliath, he wouldn't have been ready. There would have been no process. He'd have been a paper champion, right? You know, one of them paper thugs. We got a lot of those. I'm tough. I'm the toughest guy here. How many fights you been in? Well, it don't matter. I ain't been in any. Like, you ain't that tough, cat. You know, like, God put this guy through a process. Elijah with the J, who had been through all that stuff, that did all the things he did against the prophets of Baal, was depressed. He was hurting. He was anxious. He was afraid. And he had to spend 40 days in the wilderness and living in caves and eating bread and water to get back to where he needed to be. I guess my whole point in all this is you're somewhere in this journey. You've either just handled business, right, like Elijah did, right, and you're depressed and fearful and anxious. You have prepared a feast for everybody, right? You feel like you've done all these right things and nobody showed up, and poor, pitiful me, right, and I'm not happy. You could be the people who say, hey, I'm too busy to be there right now. That's where I found myself a lot, okay? I'm too busy to show up to the feast. I know everything's been done for me already. I just don't feel like it. I don't want to. Stop doing what you want to do sometimes. It's not about you. It's about the process, right? Now, you know, I have 3-6 a.m. practices a week before school starts, and then I have after school practices. Don't tell the guys, I don't like doing that. That's not fun for me. I don't like it, because if they got to be there at 6, I ain't going to walk in the door no later than 5:30. That's almost late to me, right? So that means I got to be up. I live 30 minutes. It's not fun for me. I do it because it's necessary, because when the state tournament rolls around, they don't get to sleep in. That's an early morning weigh-in. We got to be awake. So I need their body clocks to be used to weighing up at that time. If nothing else, I get them used to being awake at the time that they're going to compete. This is not fun for me, but it's part of the process. When I, a year ago, not in a good spot, okay, not a good post-knee surgery. I was in a bad place for a long time. And it just didn't all of a sudden, I get out of it. I had a lot of people that prayed for me. A lot of people sitting in here that would just text me randomly, mean a big deal to me. Spent some time with some people. There was no, and suddenly I'm back up here in front of you guys, you know, trying to be funny and preaching. It was a process, right? I had to, 40 days, maybe a year. It may be 6 months, maybe 2 days. But there's some times that we're going to have to spend some time in the wilderness making sure we eat our bread and water, right, and getting back to where we need to be. And that's the place that we had to live, and that's where success is, and that's where our fear is as well. That's where Elijah had to go. He had to go back to the last place he was successful, but he also went back to the place that made him get out of it. You're going to get tired. Bible says don't grow weary in well-doing. You're going to get tired. He's going to give you a break, but your break might not even look like a break. Your break may be in the wilderness, drawing closer to him. So I don't know where you're at this morning. I know what your plans are for New Year's. It's not a New Year's Day sermon. I don't have the word of the church for 2025. That's his job. So that's not my job. Thankful for that. But I would assume everybody in here is in a place out of the two sets of scripture we read today. Whether you're feeling like ain't nobody showing up to your party, whether you're not showing up to the party, whether you're tired, anxious, fearful, or you could be Elisha, somebody's getting ready to blow. I don't know where you're at, but somebody, you're in one of those spots this morning. What I want to tell you is the process is the most important thing. When people stop going through the process, most of them, that's when they're done living, right? You know, we look at these great coaches, and I do anyway, like the Bobby Bowdens of the world, who did a great job pouring into people. He was a football coach, by the way. For anyone under, I guess, 30 years old now. He was a good one. But he stopped coaching, right? What happened to him? He passed away, you know. I spent a long time disliking maroon and that A with the mullet off the side, right? Disliked, not because any other reason they beat us, but I love Nick Saban. That joker, he says this. Nick Saban was a pretty good coach at LSU, right? Won a national title. But it wasn't until he got to Alabama. He said, I stopped coaching transactionally. He said this recently on game day, but like he has said it before. I stopped coaching transactionally, and I started coaching transformationally. And so he's got more to pour into people. He got out of coaching college athletics because he got tired of dealing with this mercenary process of winning football games. because to him it was about the process, spending time there, learning how to develop, learning how to be successful, learning that when you get done, you need to come back. And all those guys that he coached, man, they still wear that color, and they still come back, the Mark Ingrams of the world, because he became a transactional coach, right, because that's his process. I don't know what the process looks like for you. I don't know what your 2025 looks like. I don't know what your goals are for 2025, but I can tell you that if you don't put a plan to that goal, that it's not a goal. It's a dream. It's something that you really wish happens. And, guys, that just don't happen to most of us, okay? So if you want to make things happen, you got to put a plan to it. If you're struggling with something spiritually, man, get yourself a plan. I'm going to wake up at 6 a.m. and I'm going to read. I don't want to do it. I don't feel good doing it. Maybe for you it's 5 a.m. because you got to be at work at 6. Or maybe it's I got to do something after. Whatever it is for you, you've got to do some things that you don't want to do. Elijah had to do some things he didn't want to do, but it's good for you. You need it, okay? So let's get out of this mindset of I just want to do what I want to do when I want to do it, right? And let's get back into the mindset I will do whatever it takes. We lost a dual match a couple weeks ago to a team we shouldn't have lost to. And Nick just left, so it was Bremen. I ain't lost to him in 3 years. In 3 years, and shouldn't have lost to him a couple weeks ago. And that's, you know, all credit to them. They came out and whipped us. They scored 41 points on us. And I sent out to the parents. I said, hey, we will get better. It costs what it costs. It takes what it takes. We're going to pay what it costs, and we're going to do what it takes. That was my message on Sunday to them. That sounded good to the parents, but to the boys on Monday, did you have fun that day? He did not have fun, for those of you that did not hear. We did everything in sets of 41. We did 41 minutes of monkey rolls. Those are not fun, for those of you that don't know what that looks like. We did everything in sets of 41. 41 stand-ups, 41 eye crotch. We ain't given up 41 points since then. And I don't feel like that we will, but if we do, we'll address that since then. That's the last time we've lost a match. And so it costs what it costs. It takes what it takes. You've got to be willing to pay that cost and do what it takes if you want to get out of your funk, if you want to get to that next level. Even if you're not in a funk, whatever's next, man, go chase whatever's next in your life. So that's all I got for you this morning. The good news is it was kind of soggy outside, so the kids didn't really need to go outside and play this morning. Anyway, I saved you guys some laundry and some scraping up some shoes. So, but that's all I've got for you. I know that we won't be back here until after the new year, and I don't get into the whole like New Year's resolutions and stuff, but I do feel like you can set a tone for some things that you want to see some change in that next year. But it doesn't happen by saying, I want to do this. It happens by, what does it take to do this? What do I have to do that? So, you know, I guess over the next couple of days, as you spend time with family and you start looking at what your resolutions are, start looking at what your process has got to look like. Okay, what's it got to look like? So I appreciate you guys sitting in, and this first time I feel like I've spoke since I've gotten out of my funk, I guess, if that makes sense. So it wasn't, I'm sure, as pretty as it needed to be or could have been, but I appreciate y'all sitting in and listening to me. And I don't think we have any other announcements, so if y'all are good, unless anybody has anything, I'll pray and we'll go home and we'll beat some folks to lunch or something. I don't know. All right, well, Lord, thank you so much for this day. Thank you for letting me share this morning, God. Thank you for letting me share my heart, God. I do pray that as we enter in this time period of people looking for the fastest results possible in the easiest route, God, I pray that you remind us that those tough times make us who we are, God, that tough times create tough people, God. And I just pray that we embrace and we are thankful for those opportunities, God, and we look at them like that. We look at our tough times as opportunities to grow and be better, God. And I just pray that we approach life with that mindset. I pray that we trust whatever process it is that you put us through, God, that we know that you're the author and the finisher of our faith, and whatever goes on in between there, God, it is you just painting that picture and painting that tapestry, God, and allowing us to walk through that, God, so that we can ultimately grow closer to you. I pray for everybody that's in this room, God. I pray for our pastors as they're out of town, God. I just pray for rest and relaxation, God, and wisdom, God. And I pray that you continue to pour into them and allow them to lead this family, this flock, God, as you see fit, God. And I just thank you for the calling that you've got on each and every life in here, God. I pray that if there's somebody that doesn't understand where they're going or what their process is, God, I pray that they do those simple things like reading and getting that bread on a daily basis, Father, and that you pour into them and show them what that looks like, God. I'm just thankful to be here where I am, God, in 2024, and I'm so excited about what you've got for us this next year, God. I just thank you and I love you, and it's in your name I pray. Amen.